Hi listener, or hopefully listeners, welcome to our first podcast. My name is Jay, I'm your host, and this week I'm joined by these wonderful people.
Sam.
Bex.
And Lindsay.
Yay.
And together we are, it all began with friends.
Vegan with friends.
Vegan
it
with
all
friends.
Began
you get it, guys?
Friends.
Wink, wink. Oh my God.
So, you by now have guessed that we are all vegan. And we are friends. Well, Sam is actually my fiance, but I believe we are still friends.
Just snuck that one in there.
We all currently live in London, and we all work creatively within the arts. We hope to give you all the latest vegan gossip, tips, struggles, and more. But ultimately create a way to share with you our day-to-day life as a vegan, a creative, a person living in London, and most importantly, our stories, hopes, and fears. You are literally a fly on our wall, and we hope you enjoy it. Firstly, Sam and I haven't always been vegan. We started our journey over 3 years ago and slowly cut meat and dairy products out, learning what to replace them with as we went along. Finally, a year ago, I think it was, we were able to confidently say we are living a vegan lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just got a little heart pang. That was really nice.
We were actually very much inspired by you, Bex.
Oh, God.
How long have you been vegan now? And when did you make that choice to go vegan?
I think... See, I have to work this out by how many Christmases I've done as a vegan. And I think I've done 3. So this year will be my 4th. So wow. I think it was about September time that I went. September, October kind of time. So coming up to maybe roughly about 4 years.
Wow.
But give or take that a little bit because I get a bit confused. But I've been vegetarian my whole life. So it was a much easier transition for me than the average person, I'd guess.
So you've never ever like eaten meat or...
No, do you know what? I remember as a kid, I'd have a sausage from a fish and chip shop as a treat.
Oh, bad sausage.
No, we're all vegans, guys. Right?
Shit. Yeah.
But no, I've not tried a lot of things. I was conned into eating ham once.
What do you mean conned?
Because as a kid, right? So I had only ever had what we called fake ham. And I went to this party as like a little 6-year-old, and I was like, "Is it fake ham or real ham?" And she was like, "Well, what do you eat at home?" I was like, "Fake ham." She was like, "Well, it's fake ham then." No, it wasn't fake ham.
Why would she do that?
What a nasty piece of work.
I know. So there was like little poor little me like, it's meal ham.
So why do you count it by Christmases? Is that because Christmas is such a like a big part of eating? It's like
I don't know. I just think it's like I guess a landmark. Like because my family are vegetarian, not vegan. I can think of how many Christmas dinners I've sat down to where I've gone, "Can I eat that? Can I eat that?
Yeah.
You know. Whereas like. When I was just vegetarian, it wasn't a thing. It was just, you know, we all ate everything.
Mm.
So I think I can remember the first one because it was like, I was very, very new vegan then, and I was like, trying to work everything out. And my mum was like, "I don't know if I can make this." Yorkshire puddings. Mum nailed vegan Yorkshire puddings this year.
Yes, mum.
Really?
Claps to mum. Yeah, she absolutely did.
That's so cool. It's so nice when people in your family respect
your
decision and try to like go with it.
Yeah, 100%.
Rather than against you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My parents were actually like doing a lot more to kind of segue into less and less dairy products, but my poor mother, she's a celiac and lactose intolerant, so she's got enough to contend with.
Mm. Yeah.
But they're all trying. It's good.
Yeah. So that's all you can really
Exactly. That's what you can do. Just to get like the cogs turned and get thinking about it. And
Lindsay, you're our newest member to our vegan family.
Thanks for having me, vegans.
You're so welcome.
How are you feeling with your decision to go vegan, and how long has it been now for you?
How long has it been? So I've been veggie for like 12 years. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like my like childhood rebellion, is being like, "I'm not eating meat anymore." And I was like, "Okay, cool."
It's like, you didn't dye your hair blue, you stopped.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I thought that was pretty like radical at the time, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's only been, I think, probably since March, so a couple months ago, I finished a tour and then came back and was like, "Now I need to get on it and, you know, make it a priority." But since like walking through the door, it's been the easiest decision, you know?
Mm.
It's one of those things of like, I think it's like a light switch going on. And you're like, it's just,
so many people
you just don't
that,
go
right?
back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just even the idea it. Of it is kind of like, I don't know. It's a change, and it's like, it's changed everything about my life and how I
yeah.
eat and things.
Yeah.
And the more I read, the more I feel like affirmed in that. And it's a really cool, empowering thing, I think.
Yeah.
To be like, I've made a change about myself, and if you can make this change, you can make so many other changes
that's
as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. That is true.
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting kind of threshold to walk over because, again, at the time I was like, well, I'm veggie, so I'm wearing that banner, and I'm like, I care about animals, you know? And it's really important, I think, to like see these things through to their sort of logical conclusions. And for me, that like this is the obvious logical conclusion of like caring about animals and caring about my health and all these other things is having to, I guess, see it through. Because you, not saying you can't, but it's very hard to sort of wear that banner to wear that banner and not, you know. But yeah, it's been really fun as well. It's like loads of like recipes coming out and talking to you guys. And I think there's a really cool community in London right now of people that are
definitely.
Like, yeah, that care and are like having cool restaurants and options and things. It's kind of, it's an easy time to do it almost.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking about it, just do it.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a very, like, it's the easiest time that it ever has been to do it.
I can't imagine being vegan even like 5 years ago, like how much harder it must have been, like just the lack of options available, like even all these different milks you can get and
without teas and coffee.
Never mind just like going to a restaurant and everything on the menu is vegan. That's amazing. It's still a rarity, but like it's out there and we can have it, but Yeah.
And yet it's still actually not really, really easy either, though, because there's still a lot of change to happen. So even, for example, this morning, like, we've all got our oat coffee and teas now.
It took us 45 minutes.
Because, like, we spent, 45 minutes looking for somewhere that did do alternative milks. And bless Lindsay, she just has an Americano, no milk.
No, she got some milk in the other place. She was really cheeky and asked for it.
She's like, I didn't buy my coffee from you, but can I have some free milk?
take.
Yeah. So there is still a long way to go, but we have definitely come a long way. And it's definitely, like you said, the easiest time, I think.
I think in the last, like, 2 years, it has boomed. Like, it has taken off so much, like, more than anything else, and just like a lot of mainstream brands and companies and that, you know, all taking steps to provide options and things like that. That's only happened in the last, you know, for certain things in the last like 6 months to a year.
Totally.
Yeah. Things like
summer of veganism.
I'm very conscious though as well that because I personally am quite a recent vegan, like in the last year, that perhaps these options have been available for longer, and it's only because I'm just noticing now that I'm more aware of it. And like, I'm very eager. I feel like it's part of my journey to speak to more people that have been vegan for like decades, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
And just kind of like talk to them about their journey and discuss that. And just,
because it might be quite different, and it's interesting to think about that.
Get some perspective on it as well.
There's so
I think.
Many like rumors, I think, that I was told, like, sort of being a vegetarian, well, being vegan's too far.
Yeah.
That's too far.
Yeah.
It's extreme.
Don't be too extreme. You kind of want to guard yourself a little bit and not be the person that makes the waves and stuff.
Yeah.
I just think there's so many rumors about, like, oh, it's super expensive. You have to like plan super far in advance. And to some extent, these things can be true, but there's also so many ways of going like around it. And
But it's really funny that I live with two meat eaters, and they basically do not eat meat in the flat because it's too expensive. They live basically in the flat as vegetarians because meat.
Actually, our flatmate does as well. She very rarely eats meat in the flat, and that's nothing to do with us.
Yeah, exactly. It's
her own choice.
I think it's only when you start to roam into things like. You know, like the crazy replacements, like actual meat replacements and things like that, that then it gets expensive. Like you start buying like seitan and all that kind of stuff, like, which is great.
Mm.
But if you just stick to what the basics of veganism is, like, it's not harder, it's not more expensive, it's not unhealthy, like, it's a lot easier in a lot of aspects.
Yeah. But then I think it's like what Lindsay was saying as well, is it's like a light bulb moment for you. And I think that has to come quite naturally
to you
personally. Like, nobody can be pressured into being a vegan. I think we can have conversations that might influence, or even sometimes I've gone for a meal with friends who eat meat, and they'll order, this actually happened once, they ordered fish and chips. And they were really looking forward to fish and chips, and obviously I can't eat fish or the chips actually because they were cooked in fat. So I went for this roasted vegetable dish, which was just a side, but it came out really big and it was really nice. And my friends were like, "That looks so good. That looks so good. I wish I'd gone for that now." And it's like half the price of ours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
like, who's winning now?
Yeah, but. Yeah, I mean, my turning point was when I read the book Eating Animals.
Mm-hmm.
I know Sam and Lindsay, you've both read it, haven't you? Bex, you haven't read that yet,
have
you?
I have not, no, I have no idea.
But you know, I've actually got it here.
Let's have a look.
Take a look, podcasters.
It's not that long,
it's not long. Yeah, have a look.
It's not that long, but there's a lot of information.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I've literally never even looked at this book.
Well, I've actually brought some quotes from the book with me, so maybe we can just share a couple with... Lindsay, do you want to go first with
your... Definitely. Okay, so Jonathan Safran Foer from Eating Animals. This is actually a quote that you told me before I'd gone vegan, and I still remember the tingles that I got, so it's prepare yourselves.
It's actually my favourite quote from the book as well.
Ooh,
is it?
Yeah.
Here we go. Okay, if we were to one day encounter a form of life more powerful and intelligent than our own, and it regarded us as we regard fish, what would be our argument against being eaten?
Aliens.
Oh, aliens, yeah.
Aliens.
A higher race or something coming down.
It's
or even
so
just
true.
Like advanced
I just
humans.
Think it's so powerful.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. But it's just so obvious as well.
Yeah, it's,
And it's also not just fish. I mean, all animals, all other living things, to be honest. I mean, even the way
species.
We treat humans.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's
you
true.
Know?
And it's so interesting, these little lines that we draw, I find, because a lot of people go, well, you know, I won't eat cows, but I'll eat fish. And it's like, well, how did we get this sort of, like, this moral compass saying, well, this is okay and this is not, and this kind of pain is worthy and this kind of pain is not?
Yeah.
Who are we to decide that?
Someone told me the other day, they were like, yeah, but you can eat fish, fish don't feel pain. I was like, oh, God, I'm just going to leave. Christ.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, like, I was probably one of those people, actually, that was so... I just didn't connect with fish.
Yeah.
I just didn't see them in the same way I would see my dog. I just didn't.
Yeah.
I just didn't think that they would feel anything or that they suffered so much. But actually, the more I've watched videos or read books on this subject, it's just awful what happens.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And for me, I think reading books like Eating Animals is so important. When I read that book, I had no idea half of the things that went on. And had I read that book earlier, I think I probably would have become a vegan earlier.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the idea of being a vegan that made me do it. Like, people are like, oh, it's a trend.
Yeah,
and I'm like, actually... It wasn't about being a vegan that made me a vegan. It was what I learned that I had been disconnected to, which was from birth, really. I was brought up to drink cow milk for your bones and eat meat, have roast dinner on a Sunday, every Sunday. And and then I read this book that just informed me of what actually is happening. And I've always felt very connected to animals. Mm. Sometimes more than humans.
Definitely.
And then I thought, how have I never thought about these things before? And I just wanted to know more. And so I read more and I watched more. And the more I learned, the more I felt I couldn't ignore that anymore.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's hard
because
you think, actually, I wish I hadn't learned that. And I think that is what puts people off because they think, oh, once I know that, I can't go back because then I'm seen as ignorant for knowing that and still doing
it. Course.
But I just think deep down, we all really know it.
I want to ask Lindsay, like, what do you think? Because being a vegetarian for so long, like you said, we put that, we're like, we know we care about animals, we're vegetarians, like, this is how we live, we don't eat meat.
Yeah.
And then when you find out all this stuff about the dairy industry as well,
yeah.
that was really hard for me because I was like, but I've loved animals all my life and I've altered my life to love animals and I've just been doing it all wrong. Like,
pretty
it was really hard for me to realise that I thought I was doing everything that I could.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like, no, I was not.
Mm-hmm. You hit the nail on the head. That's exactly it. You kind of... I was listening to another podcast, actually. Malcolm Gladwell's one. I shouldn't name his name, should I? He's amazing. Listen to his podcast. I don't know. Who cares?
I don't think you're saying anything negative about him. So.
Another podcast. Malcolm Gladwell. He was a fellow Canadian. And he talks a lot about this thing called moral licensing, which I think is so pertinent in what you just said, because it's the idea that if you... do a good thing, for instance, it gives you license or the ability in yourself to then go and do more bad things.
Yeah.
Kind of, because you've gotten behind this one thing. So the example he gave was electing Barack Obama, like electing a black man to the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And people go, I voted for Obama, therefore I'm not racist. And it actually gives them permission to sort of inhabit or further racist behaviors.
Yeah.
And they can say, but no, I can do,
I'm not racist because I voted for,
And you have this banner, this little stake in yourself that says, I did this thing.
A little fact of evidence that goes, I'm not racist.
Yeah. So I think maybe to some extent that was what was happening for me.
Yeah.
Going, I've done this thing. I'm a good person. I care about animals. Yeah. Look at how I care about animals. But again, you got to follow that through.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's seeing it too, because I think to some extent, I still wanted to believe in the, you know, like the dairy farmer, like with the cow and you milk the cow and all these things. Yeah. And
see, that's with me, but I just didn't realize. I just didn't realize. And then you start to learn all these things about the dairy industry.
Yeah.
And like that was literally just made me go, well, I just can't eat dairy then.
Yeah.
I have to go for a whole hog. Yeah. Like.
But we just can't blame ourselves because it's the way we're brought up. It's the way society is kind of brainwashed into. It's what we're brainwashed into believing. So, I think it's just about waking up as well and just becoming a lot more aware, which I think is very much a characteristic of our generation, like millennials. Like we're,
I think, also
the
most
aware generation. Maybe.
Companies do their utmost to hide everything that goes on behind the closed doors.
Yeah.
And, you know, in all the advertising and everything that's put out to the consumer, it's done so that we justify it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we go, it's okay, because look. And I think, like you say, we are a generation that is opening our eyes and questioning everything.
My friend the other day, he said he was driving his car and there was an ice cream van in front of him and it had this picture of a cow in the meadow, all really happy. It was like a cartoon animated like cow, really happy. And he was like, I'm not sure that cow's really happy to provide that cream for you.
Did you see a certain brand did a campaign where you could, it was a dairy brand, where you could sponsor one of their cows? And they were like,
that's really scary.
This is crazy.
Really scary.
Like,
whenever I see things like that, like adverts, I just imagine all these people sat around a table in this big high-rise building, like this marketing team, just knowing they're telling outright lies. But it's just all about money, and I just don't know how they live with themselves.
I guess they can sense that this is like, We're coming up, you know. We're like there's more awareness. The vegans are coming
out.
Exactly. And they kind of say, how can we appeal to that sensibility that people are obviously having right now, and make them think, oh no, come back. It's not so bad.
Exactly,
come back to the side. Look, we have.
Yeah, look how well we're looking after.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going back to what you were saying, Lindsay, about making yourself read and watch things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep learning. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you think, when do you stop reading? And Sam, I think you said the film Okja. Is that how you pronounce it?
Okja? The same pronunciation as it would be in Japanese.
Wait,
so
is it not the same
Korean
thing as that vegetable that's the lady's finger?
What?
Oh, no, that's okra.
Okra. No, let's not call it okra.
I mean, it's nearly the same.
I watched that and also the BBC documentary Carnage on the same night.
So
like
good.
We watched them, Jay. So that one, if anyone hasn't heard of it or watched it, that is narrated by Simon Amstel. It kind of details this fictional future where all of the UK, I think it's the UK, are vegan, and it looks to the past and it shows people that have lived the past and are now all vegan in the future, and it just kind of shows them dealing with the fact that they used to eat meat and they used to have dairy, and so most of it is just about this this fictional future and about the past, and just looking back at all of the information that was given to us, all the advertising, etc. And it really, really drums it into you how shocking it all is. And it kind of gives you a glimpse of hope as well. And I just remember afterwards, I was like, this is possible. We can actually get there. We can actually have a whole country that is vegan, at least. Like, this is possible. And that was what really switched it in my brain. Like, it was just a switch. And it was like you were saying, Lindsay, mm-hmm. earlier on, and you just can't go back. Yeah. Can't go
you
back
walk
after
the door, it closes.
Yeah. 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 And I think unless you have that switch, then I don't think you can dedicate yourself to a life of veganism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's too hard if you don't wholeheartedly want to do it. And that comes from there's no looking back.
And animals as well. I know some people don't always start a vegan diet based on the right of animals. They do it for health. And as great as that is, there's no like law or rule that you can be a vegan because of this. But I think from what my experience of people who do it for animals tend to stay.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Once.
Also a bit more like strong-willed, because you can always forget about your own health. You can always say, oh, you know,
swearing.
Oh, damn it.
But some people do it not for like, obviously there's really serious health concerns where people go on a diet, but some people just do it to like lose weight or, do you know what I mean? Or
more veg.
Yeah, or get a six pack. Yeah. I don't
Beach
have a
bod.
Six pack yet, but that's because I don't do enough exercise.
Speaking though of like sort of the influential things that like crossed us through the thresholds and all that stuff. There's a great book by Dr. Michael Greger called How Not to Die. And I keep telling you to read it.
I've got it. I've got it from the library and I need to read it.
So it's
one of many.
Kind of like, Dr. Michael Greger sort of vouches for a whole food plant-based diet. He doesn't even call it vegan because there's loads of ways that obviously, as we all know, you can be vegan by eating sort of like really processed foods and crisps and chips and all that kind of good
Live
stuff.
Live off chips.
The delicious
I eat too many
things.
Chips.
Don't we all? But so he kind of advocates for the whole food, meaning like, you know, as close to how they come out of the ground as mm-hmm. humanly possible. And even though he says that... like he has come to kind of encompass the sort of animal rights aspect of things. His book and his cookbook focus entirely on health and nutrition because he's like, no one's talking about that. And the fact is that you can live such a full and healthy lifestyle and combat so many diseases by eating, like by literally what you put into your body.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want his kind of message of health from a medical doctor to be, I think, undercut in some ways by a different banner that he isn't equipped to fight, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of interesting. Maybe like you guys can comment on it a little bit of like the fear almost of being too, like too animal rights. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think some people get turned off by it. There's a sort of snowflake, bleeding hearts, oh wow, Kami River.
Yeah.
And it's like, why does that undercut a really valid argument? Do you know what I mean?
It shouldn't, but I think that a lot of the time people, unless they feel it impacts them personally.
That's exactly what they're I was about to say.
Yeah, they're just not willing to think about anything outside of their own want and needs.
I think we as a human species, we are our own number one. We all care about ourselves more than anything
else.
Survival
instincts,
exactly. And so it's that natural thing to go, you know, okay, but what's it doing for me?
Mm.
And for me, like, that is not what veganism is about at all. Even if I knew that it was a far more unhealthy diet than, like, a meat diet, I would still do it because I don't do it for me.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a kind of common thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But the fact it can be so healthful.
Yeah,
of course, exactly.
And
yeah.
It's just
You know, I actually... Obviously, eating animals was a massive influence on me, but the book, I mean... But actually, the first time I started thinking about cutting out meat wasn't because of animals. It was actually when my granddad was going through cancer. Mm. And he was told, because he had esophageal cancer, and he was told he had to give up solid food. And he was actually told by doctors, you should be blending everything, which for somebody who's lived 80 years eating meat, it's a really hard thing to do. Mm. Like, it sounds hard, but...
Can you even blend meat?
I don't think I ever tried. Maybe chicken, I don't know. Which makes me feel sick at the thought of it now. But I do remember my granddad having a list of things he should be eating. And I'm not saying meat causes cancer, because no one has proved that, you know. But the list of ingredients my granddad should be eating was vegetables and fruit. And mm-hmm. pretty much that was all. Mm-hmm. And they were saying you should be blending those things and... drinking that, and that was his only meals. So I had to try my hardest to try and create interesting meals, like different things that would just liquid. Yeah, we did actually a liquid diet challenge.
We did it a couple of times,
2 years in a row. Yeah, where we raised money for esophageal cancer charities and a couple of different ones actually. And it was really hard. I think we did it for 7 days the first time. We did it for 10 the second. And you know, it's not really about eating the vegetables and fruit, because that's really good for you. Mm. But obviously you do need other things like lentils and rice and bread and other things. You need carbs too. Yeah, you can't just really live on fruit and veg. Mm. You probably could, but I think it's quite difficult. You know, my energy levels really went down. Mm. Yeah, and that's the thing, is it wasn't just about eating vegetables and fruit. We were liquidizing them. So our stomach wasn't actually breaking down the food itself. So it felt like it had no purpose, really. Yeah. And it was just flushing straight through us. And I watched my granddad's body just disappear. Mm. And it was really, really hard. But going back to the point was that... there was no meat on that list, and there was no dairy really either. Mm-hmm. And it really made me think, mm-hmm. and I thought, okay, if they're saying, obviously he's got to swallow things, so that probably goes into it, but there's certain dairy and meat things you probably can break down if you wanted to, you know?
Baby food.
I think I remember breaking down, like, food. Blending
you
a...
Had I had baby food during it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was just easy, it was in a pot. it was a low.
But I do remember, like,
they have, like, macaroni cheese baby food and, like, stew and pie baby food, so you obviously can blend
and we did blend really disgusting things. I remember, because my granddad loves Bakewell tart, so I remember just blending a Bakewell tart with loads of milk to just try and give him something that was a different flavour.
That's what those people do in those, like, fancy milkshake places, don't they? They just get thing and plonk it in, blend it with ice cream.
Charge £10 for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, that was my... A big awakening for me, though, was like, okay, if these things are not recommended to boost your health, and they're saying avoid these things, because that can, like, make it worse.
There must be some kind of reason.
There must be a reason. And I thought, well, why are people not thinking about this before they have cancer?
Yeah, exactly.
Why do we wait until we have cancer or another disease to think about the food might be having an impact? Yeah. And there's no evidence, like I said before, that... meat or dairy or anything that does cause
There's
those
quite
things.
A few things though that prove certain things in certain things.
There are, but I don't have the knowledge to be able to put that out there and say, you know.
I'll bring in some stuff from How Not to Die, because Dr. Michael Greger talks a lot about talks a lot about these things. But I think there are some tenuous links being made.
Yeah.
And it is really hard to prove, because a lot of these diets, like you have to, I think it's a double blind interventionist studies have to be carried out, which means that no one can know who's the patient, who is not. So let's say if you're like, we need to put you on a plant-based diet for X amount of times, usually the person's gonna kind of realize that they're on a plant-based diet. So you have to somehow convince the people involved in those studies to make it sort of unequivocal evidence. They have to not know that they're involved in it or what side of the study they're actually on. So it makes it really difficult to get something like set in stone and firm, but there are links, I think, being drawn.
I've definitely got because there was a time when I was trying to learn all these facts, so I could, like, you know, when you're in a conversation with someone, would just be like, fact, figure.
thank you.
Numbers. And there was a time that I was trying to learn them all, so I've got lots of, like, screenshots of all these facts and stuff, and there's definitely a lot of... I think I watched What the Health as well, and there's a lot on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I
I mean, I think a lot of, I think there is a lot. I think I'm just a bit wary of putting it out there. And I know that people will attack you for it and say, like, you can't say that meat causes cancer.
Oh,
and I'm
no,
like, well, can't I can't because I don't know.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean I don't think it could.
Yeah. One thing that I think we can agree on, though, is that, especially in medicine, again, Dr. Michael Greger, love this man. I think the most amount of time that a medical student that he found was donated to nutrition was 12 hours throughout the course of the medical degree. And a lot of time is sort of advocated or allocated towards end-of-life care and obviously making people comfortable once they already are sick.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people can kind of agree on, even people within the medical community saying, like, we treat people once they get sick. Mm-hmm. But what about preventing it? Because there's obviously something we can be doing. And how do we invest in that? But it's not very lucrative to invest in people not getting sick and put time and effort into that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's so many vested interests, and I mean, another thing we could probably all agree on is like there are powers that be that are much bigger than us, and you know, they have money at stake, and that's kind of what makes the world go round.
Talking about the world.
You see that segue, people?
Lindsay's off to India for a month. So just wondering, have you done any research about what it might be like to be a vegan living in India?
I have done. So I'm going to do some yoga teacher training in Rishikesh.
Oh, amazing.
In the foothills of the Himalayas.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's going to be
fun. Amazing.
I'm very excited. So obviously wanted to look into sort of like food and what would be happening over there. And the place that I'm going in Rishikesh is actually completely meat-free. There is no meat or alcohol sold in the city limits of Rishikesh.
Apart from the alcohol, amazing.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Just take a stash with you.
Yeah, so I was kind of looking into like why this might be. And I think we all, again, we have ideas about like sacred cows, but like why and how does this sort of come about? So it like this sort of thinking goes way back. I was reading sort of ancient India. There were the Vedas. I really apologize for any poor pronunciation that comes out here. This is kind of like the Spark Notes version, and hopefully when I'm over there, I'll flesh it out a little bit more. But yeah, the Spark Notes was so the Vedas were the first scriptures of Hinduism in the second millennia BCE, and something that came out of that was the teachings of Ahimsa, which is the non-violence towards all living beings, and that theme kind of comes up again and again, both in like sort of yoga training, but also in subsequent religious and spiritual practices that came out of the East since then. So Jainism and Buddhism being noteworthy ones that are really active over there.
What was that first one?
Jainism.
I've never heard of that.
7th to the 5th century BCE. Jainism. Jainism?
Jainism? I don't know.
Again, sorry guys. I'll get the pronunciation right.
I've never heard of that. That's interesting.
No, I haven't either.
So the Jainism, has Ahimsa really central to its teaching, and it believes in the sanctity of all life, and so they are strict vegetarians. And will even go to great lengths to avoid harming insects, apparently. And Buddhism, which we're probably more familiar with, was the sort of third wave to emerge. But it teaches sort of vegetarianism as part of its practice, but not as strictly, I think. And so, yes, that's kind of at play in the thinkings of the people of Rishikesh.
So again, that makes me like that. Really, this is why sometimes I think it's really easy to question yourself, because you think, well, this is like obviously really important to them. But they use the term vegetarian.
Yeah. Well, here's what I was reading.
Do you know what I mean?
Is the interesting bit. Basically, India has the highest population of vegetarians in the world. Approximately one-third of its population are vegetarians.
Oh, India.
Which is yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
But it has a very, proportionally, very few are vegan. So there's, so many contradictions that are happening in here. So the consumption of dairy, meat, especially chicken and eggs, is actually on the rise in India. Mm. And
which kind of goes against everything else.
And also it is the world's largest, I've got some other things here, the largest exporter of beef in 2012.
What?
It has the largest population of dairy cows, second largest producer of milk at 50.3 million tons per year. third largest production of eggs behind China and the US, sixth for chicken meat, and second for fish after China. So it's these kind of contradictions that, like, on the surface you look and go, that's amazing, like, oh, what a little, like, haven. But what, like...
But I reckon a lot of that will be to do with population density. Like, they are one of the heaviest populated countries on the planet.
Yeah. The place I'm flying into is the second most populated city in the world.
Oh my goodness.
Which is crazy. It's 27 million, I think. I might be wrong on that one. And you kind of see, like, the politics getting involved in it as well as the sort of moral standpoints. So I think it's really nuanced, and I hope to learn more when I get over there actually talking to people. Because apparently the initial cow protection movement was actually an expression of Hindu nationalism over... over like the sort of welfare of it, and they didn't actually get really involved in like vivisection or animal experimentation and testing. It was more so about like it was a rallying cry, apparently. I'm really looking forward to kind of mining that a little bit, because it seems like there's a lot of contradictions, both in sort of like the legislation versus the actual thinking, you know.
But I reckon a lot of that, like, they're obviously massively vegetarian or whatever, I think a lot of that will come back to the same notion that people don't realise that the dairy industry is just as bad and just as violent, just as cruel. And I think, you know, if their whole, I can't remember what the word was, but it comes back to not being violent to all living beings, and just most people don't realise that violence happens in the dairy industry. And I think, I mean, it sounds like, talking out my arse a little bit, but like, people just don't know that the dairy is just as bad.
And it's also, it's a developing country with a lot of space.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like China, you see it there as well, where you have space now and you want to, you know, capitalize on that. And the West is here saying, we want the X amount of chickens. We want to pay less than a pound of breast, you know, someone has to deliver on that.
Yeah.
And as one of the poorer countries, they do what they need to do, don't they?
Do you think it'll be easy to find food out there?
I do.
You do?
Well, because the course that I'm doing actually provides 3 meals a day, and they're all obviously vegetarian meals. And I was like, is vegan okay? They're like, absolutely, which is great. And Rishikesh, again, seems like it's quite on the sort of bandwagon with the sort of ahimsa and the veggies and all that stuff. I was reading this morning that I think it was 2004 that was when the Supreme Court ratified their agreement to have no meat or alcohol for sale there as a holy place. And so it was like legally binding, which is quite cool. Yeah, so they just seem like a place. And also they have environmental barriers in place to help preserve the Holy Ganges River, which flows through there as well. So it seems like it's a priority for them. And there's a bunch of yogis wandering around, so I'm sure I won't be the only one.
I have heard, like, I don't know where I'm pulling this fact from, but I've heard that India is one of the easiest places to live as a vegan, or maybe as vegetarian. I mean, that would probably make more sense, wouldn't it? But I don't know.
I'll eat a lot of dal.
We'll have to catch up with you through Skype while you're out there, because you're there
for a month,
aren't you?
I'm there for the whole month.
So we'll definitely, in our next podcast, we'll Skype you in. And
can I please be invited back just for that?
Yeah, of course. It would be so interesting to like hear how it's been out there.
Yeah, because again, like what you hear about and what you actually see and experience could be two very different things.
Yeah,
so it'd be really interesting to hear firsthand experience from it.
I'm psyched.
Talking about going places,
last
weekend we me and Sam went to Hull to attend a family party, as Sam comes from Hull. Every time we've been to Hull, we come across a new place to eat as a vegan. This time we found a really cute venue called The Zoo.
Just to clarify.
I actually messaged Happy Cow, because I don't know if anyone's heard of Happy Cow.
Yeah,
the app.
It's really good.
It's great. We used it in Paris, and it was just mind-blowing in Paris.
I
didn't realise there were so many places to go to, vegan. it was just so good.
You wouldn't think. You'd think of like charcuterie and fromage.
Yeah. So good. So I messaged Happy Cow and said to them, I found this place called The Zoo in Hull, but it's not on your Happy Cow app. Mm-hmm. Is there any way I can add that on? And they were like, yeah. So they sent me a link and anything. So if anyone ever finds a really cool place, but it's not on the app, just message Happy Cow and they'll send you a link. And
I need to get Happy Cow.
Yeah, it's so good. Mm. But anyway, so I've messaged Happy Cow in regarding it, and then they will contact the zoo personally and get all their details and everything from them, which is great. But they served a really, really good chocolate orange cake. It was vegan, and it tasted like a Terry's chocolate orange. It was just so good. It was moist. So moist. sometimes vegan cakes, though, because people are experimenting still. It's still quite a new thing when it comes to baking. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they can be quite dry and bland. Yeah.
You weren't a fan of this muffin, were you?
I wasn't, no. It was a bit dry.
We're all enjoying it, though, aren't we?
You can all have
dipping
it.
Dipping into that.
Had a bite.
Everybody's taste buds
are
different.
It smells really good.
It smells good, it looks good, but to me, it just wasn't moist enough.
Really moist.
I do. But no, this chocolate orange cake was so good. If you're ever in Hull, check it out. They also did a really good full English breakfast. Oh. So good. Just, if you're in Hull, go there. But while we were in Hull, Sam had a lot of questions and concerns from family members. About his diet,
because obviously you are going to die as a vegan.
Yeah. Well, they felt he looked too skinny, and I think it's something. Yeah, and I think it's something people ask a lot when they know you have become vegan. They want to voice an opinion on that choice, and sometimes it does just come from a place of worry. Mm-hmm. Because obviously our family love us, and they want to know you're okay. But Sam, you feel well in yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, and I know I see you every day, but I think you look good. But how does that affect you when people tell you that you look too skinny?
Well, even though for them it'll come from a place of worry, I think there's still the element of it being a compliment, and people still think calling someone slim is a compliment, so they don't see what serious connotations it can have when they say this to someone. So I think there's that. I can't remember the question. Sorry.
How does that affect you when people like tell you look too skinny? Like, how does that make you feel?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, not great, and it does make you question yourself as well, and especially when you have just started this journey and you don't feel massively equipped with information. Like, I do feel good in myself, and I feel very good with the decision I've made to go vegan, and no one will ever change my mind, and I think it is healthy, but it's still, I mean, I've grown up eating meat, so I still have that in me, that, and I'm still surrounded by all of this information, all this advertising. So, yeah.
I think people are so quick to tell you, oh, you're too skinny. Like, I think you might not be well because you're a vegan. You're not getting protein.
Everyone becomes a medical expert.
Yeah, and I think, well, actually, I'm not saying that you're unhealthy if you eat meat, but I know a lot of people, especially people in my family, who eat meat and dairy, who are ill and have cancer. You know, they have diabetes, they suffer from heart conditions. And I think, well, you all eat, most of your diet actually is mostly meat and dairy. So if your diets are so healthy and you're such a medical expert, how comes you all are not well? And I'm not saying that only food creates diseases. There's loads of factors to why. But there is also factors in the fact that what you eat does have an impact.
Of course it
you
will
know?
Have an impact, right?
So I just think that people need to people need to make choices themselves. And I think people are very quick to attack vegans for being preachy. Yeah. But actually, people who eat meat are equally as preachy. And it's like, you're a vegan, you shouldn't be. You should eat meat. Yeah. Well, what's the difference of me telling you shouldn't eat meat and you telling me I should?
Yeah.
But what's the difference, actually?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can be equally as preachy. You just don't see it as preachy because you haven't got a label as a carnist.
Yeah. I also think you say, like, when people say, you know, oh, you look too skinny, you're not healthy, whatever, you know, sometimes it does come from a place of concern, absolutely. But I also think for, you know, maybe if it doesn't come from a close friend or family member, I think a lot of people, it doesn't come from a place of concern. It comes from a defense. Like, I think so many people know deep down that a vegan lifestyle is very pure and very, it's harm-free, and it's, I think a lot of people know it's a very good thing to do, but because they don't want to make that step and they're not interested in it, they get very defensive about it, and you know, so then attack the person, and that's how they get their moral high ground back, and you know, and I think a lot of it comes from that, which, you know, is only natural, and it's what we've been taught. You know, if someone's doing something better than I say better in quotation marks, because who's to say what's better and what's not, but if someone's doing something that is seen as a good thing and they're not doing it, they don't want to feel bad for not doing it. They want to knock the other person down for doing it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that sounds very extreme. That sounds very, like, I think everyone else is a twat, but I don't. but I think it subconsciously comes from that kind of place.
Yeah.
Not always from a place of concern.
I agree. Yeah. I think also talking about people's bodies too, and like feeling the need to comment on that is, it's just such dangerous territory.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What do you know about anything about that person's life?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it may come from a vegan lifestyle. Maybe Sam is struggling with that. Maybe like, there's so many things that you don't know when you comment on a body, which is like literally a map of your life.
Yeah.
Like what you eat, what you do, your actions, everything is like contained in this sort of like this meat suit that we wear around. Yeah. And to comment on it, like, it's just such a slippery slope, such dangerous territory.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going on in Sam's life?
Well, Sam and I have always been quite slim.
Yeah.
I've always been a slim person. Mm. I'm not saying that is good or bad, you know, we just have been. And yes, I think admittedly we have lost a little bit more weight since being vegan, but I don't know that that's also because of our diet. I mean, Sam's workload is a lot bigger than it used to be 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I also have spent 2 years very much grieving over my granddad's death, and that would have had an impact on me as well. And I think there's massive impacts on around us of different things to do with our life other than just the food we eat.
But people are just quick to go,
it's the food.
Vegan, skinny.
Exactly. Like, and they don't take into account anything else that's going on in your life.
I just think you should never have to justify it.
No.
Like, you should never have to say, oh yeah, but it could be this, it could be that. Like, you should, it's no one else's business.
Yeah. I think people spend too much time worrying about other people, judging, commenting on their lives, and they should just worry about their own existence.
I so agree. And I've actually, something I want to work on as well, because I'm very aware of, like, I don't want to come across as preachy, or I don't want to, and I noticed myself doing it too, even like undercutting my own beliefs and be like, oh yeah, well, it was easy for me because of this, and kind of almost excusing it to make room for someone else's discomfort.
Yeah, which is very true.
We almost do the same thing as they do to us. We do the same thing. We kind of like get on that defense like of being like, I need to prove that the decision I've made is right because I know that you're against me, in exactly the same way someone who eats meat would feel when they're talking to us and they feel like they need to tell us why.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always from a horrible place when it can get a bit preachy. It's just from a place of feeling like you need to protect your decision.
And also, like, I think, yourself, like, as humans, we naturally don't really like confrontation.
Mm.
We don't like to argue, especially when it's people we're close to, like family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to sit there and have an argument about something that we are so passionate about.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to argue about it. So we, you know, we go, you know, I understand him.
Exactly.
And like, we soften everything. We
really do.
We step on eggshells around everything because these topics are so controversial. Though, I don't know why.
And a lot of the time, you know, I won't say anything.
Yeah.
Someone else.
Oh, like,
pretty much.
I don't think I've ever gone into a group
times.
Of people and gone, hey guys, I'm vegan. Like, shut up. Who
but
does
I mean,
that?
Out of like about 9 out of 10 times I've had an argument with someone about being a vegan or about what I eat, it's normally started from them asking me a question. So why do you not eat sausages?
Yeah.
Like, why have you made this choice?
Yeah.
And then the second I tell them why, they're like, oh, you're being a preachy vegan, stop talking.
Yeah.
You're the one who asked my opinion.
You had that a lot when you first went vegan.
I get it a lot.
Like, it was hard.
Yeah, and I do find it really difficult. Yeah. But then I have to remember the times that's when I've spoken and it's influenced people like Lindsay.
Oh, I should have said this at the beginning. Like, you were such a huge influence on me in terms of, like, again, crossing through that threshold, opening that door and closing it again. It's because I think it's so inspirational to see someone that is just doing it. Mm-hmm. And obviously we had the chats and stuff, but I was like fairly like aware of the things beforehand, being a veg and like being a sort of moral standpoint veg, with all that moral licensing that goes along with it. So like it wasn't like the things were blowing my mind necessarily factually, but just seeing someone that was able to exist so like fluidly in the world, mm-hmm. and you know, relatively, like, occasionally we'd be like, oh, can't have a brownie, darn, you know? Yeah. But that was, like, the extent of the sort of trials and tribulations of the mechanics of doing it. Yeah. Again, I witnessed a few of the sort of the tense discussions that would ensue, but, like, when it came to actually just doing it and getting on with it, it was easy. And seeing someone that lives your lifestyle and, like, lives a similar lifestyle to you, just getting on with it. I think that can be more powerful than, you know, reading all the books.
Yeah, that's the same for us with Bex.
Yeah.
You know, like, we would see you doing it,
and
we were like, well, Bex could do it, so can we. And Bex would never, I don't think you've ever preached to us once. We just had conversations.
Yeah, yeah, it's just
and
a conversation.
Because we were interested and we wanted to learn more about this part of your life, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard when things just genuinely aren't conversations, because even Sam, you're just saying right there that like just having conversations because you were genuinely interested in your friend, like that can go so far. And it's not I think a lot of times people enter into conversations to try and prove that their pre-existing ideas are already right, the things that they held dear are, and just to reaffirm that, and you go into it kind of like a battle and like my idea versus yours sort of thing, as opposed to here's a person that has a different take on the world, and I'd like to just hear about that. And you know, maybe 9 times out of 10 doesn't change anything. Yeah. And you go about your life and you go, cool, I know a little bit more about my friend Bex. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But maybe it could also spark something in you. Yeah. And if you're not feeling attacked, then there isn't that need to kind of arm yourself and,
definitely.
You know, like get that sort of the charge and the fear that goes along with the kind of adrenaline rush of having an argument.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we do that because it's, you know, it's such a charged thing. Again, not really sure why. But
why is it such a I guess it's just, it's different lifestyles, isn't it? People want to prove that you know, when it's such, it is a big thing, because like we do change our lives to stand by it.
I do think that there is still such a huge stigma surrounding veganism. Like, I remember when I was young, a family member of mine was vegan, and that was just like the most shocking thing to the rest of my family, and to me as a youngster, like, what is this? And oh my god. And I think that is still the notion that a lot of people have of vegans. And I think it's easy for us to be like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, it's normal. I mean, it should be normal, but because I think it's easy for us to be complacent as well. And it's very important to just kind of have friends and whatever who are vegan, just to, for it to be normalized. Mm-hmm. And even if people judge you, like, I don't know, maybe family members or whatever, if they judge you for that, at the end of the day, they still know somebody that is vegan is doing it.
Yeah.
And you just don't know how it might alter their mindset.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you just don't know. And it still helps.
This actually goes quite political in what I'm about to say, but
brace yourselves.
Yeah, brace yourselves. And I don't know if I should make this comparison because they're two very different things, but I am a gay man. And
what?
I think my
just what the out fuck?
But like my my family didn't know anybody who was gay before me.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it kind of coincides with what we're saying, that if you don't know somebody who's a vegan, you don't ever give it thought.
Yeah.
And actually, like, my family didn't give thought to gay people before they realised I was gay. Like, my nan said to me once, there was probably loads of people when I was young who were gay, but I never knew. And it was really, I think it was after we watched Call Me By Your Name, actually, together, me and my nan.
Aww.
Yeah, great film.
I love that.
And we watched that together, and
I think so.
My nan was like, I just didn't. And where she's so open with now, we can have really good conversation. Actually, every time I see her, we have more open conversations. I remember she asked me the other week, where did you meet Sam? And having a conversation with my dad about meeting online was just a bit weird. But it was so nice that she asked, you know, and she was interested. Mm. And I think she wouldn't have done that 5 years ago because it would have seemed too bizarre to her that somebody was gay, because she just didn't know enough. And I think that can sometimes come in the same thing with veganism, you know?
Yeah.
People don't know someone, so until they do know somebody, they're not going to pay as much attention.
Yeah. Do you know what, when my sister, when she was like a young baby, actually she must have been a couple of years old, I think. No, she was born and raised veg. So when she was a baby and they used to take the babies into the doctors to have like their weight checks and whatever, apparently the doctor came out after having like done my sister's weight check. She was like a baby, held her up in the changing room, waiting room of all these people, and went, "This is our vegetarian baby, everyone." And like, that was shocking, like that a baby was being raised a vegetarian.
Yeah. Why did he do that?
Because it was unheard of.
Is that why he did it?
Yeah.
So weird.
Like one in a million vegetarian baby.
Like a cabbage patch doll. That's just what I'm imagining. Is your sister a cabbage patch doll?
She is.
A grown one.
She is a cabbage patch.
I think that's a good place to start wrapping things up. I think we've actually been talking like almost an hour.
Over an hour.
And it's great for our first podcast. It's been really lovely talking to each other. But
you're still listening.
Yeah, I hope you're still listening.
We find out it's not being recorded.
But there are a few things to talk about briefly before we finish. Things that are happening. So on Saturday, the 25th of August, next Saturday, there will be an official animal rights march in London starting at 12 p.m. from Millbank, founded by the UK animal rights organisation Surge. The march began in London in 2016 with 2,500 vegans. And in 2017, the march doubled to 5,000. I'm thinking that this year they might have thousands more.
They're predicting 20,000.
Wow.
20,000?
So cool.
Can you imagine 20,000 people marching through?
I'm quite excited, but I'm also a bit nervous, as I've never actually been on an official animal rights march before. Bex, you have, haven't you? How would you describe that atmosphere?
I've actually been on a couple. I was one of the 5,000 last year at the animal rights march. I've been on a anti-slaughterhouse march and when they were arguing whether to release the ban on fox hunting, there was a march to keep the ban. So I've been on a couple. And
was that when you met James Aspie?
No, I met James Aspie at VegFest.
Oh
my God, the only person I've ever felt starstruck over.
I would love to meet him, actually.
Oh, wonderful experience. I have a photo. It's on my Instagram. We should definitely all go to VegFest.
Nothing.
I would like to, actually.
It's amazing. It's sorry, you asked me a question. The march. Yes, it's I absolutely adore going to the marches. I think it's one of the best things for feeling motivated, because that absolutely nothing beats being surrounded by people who are so like-minded. And not even just other vegans, but people who recognise that stuff needs to be done. You can't just do it. They recognise that you have to stand up and you have to fight and you have to walk for it and you have to march and you have to get your message across. Mm. And being in that environment is, like, every time I've been to one, I walk up to where we're meeting and I well up, because it is so, I'm, like, feeling it now, like, it is so overwhelming just seeing everyone, seeing the placards, seeing people who want to fight for it. Because it's so easy to lose sight of the good that we're doing and the progress that's happening. And that kind of thing reminds you that it is changing, it is happening, and people are doing so much good. And it's just something that, like, it's a feeling that I've never had anywhere else. Like, actually for me, it's very close to the feeling of being on stage. Like, I'm a performer, I'm a dancer, whatever. And it has a very similar feeling to that of being somewhere that you feel like you belong so much, and just giving your all to something, and just, I don't know, it's very, very overwhelming in an incredible way.
Yeah. So I remember when we went to watch the private screen of Dominion, and I remember when we were stood outside, it was quite a long queue, and I kind of felt a little bit of what I expect it might feel like, because everyone going to see Dominion, unfortunately, were vegan.
I think there was about six who weren't.
Yeah, and obviously you really wanted there to be non-vegans there, because you want to want them to see really what's happening, and not just hear stereotypes and things. You know, you want them to see why we're there. Yeah, and I remember this big queue of people, and everyone was chatting. It was so nice to know that you were in the company of so many vegans, and this was just one line, you know. But there was I remember there was a man from Dominion who was writing a quote about animals
on the floor
with chalk, and people, I mean, this was in the middle of Soho, so not Soho, it was
near Chinatown,
Leicester Square, Piccadilly, and they people were just walking through the quote as he was trying to write it, and I remember this man pushing a pushchair and saying, "Oh, stupid vegans again, what are they up to now?" And I just thought, oh, that's really sad. And I think it's things like that I think about when I think about going on a march, and I think, oh, what will there be people like that? Should I be scared or worried about going on a march because of that sort of thing?
Absolutely not. I think the response that you get mostly, I mean, you're in such a massive group, but the response that you get mostly is people standing by the side of the street and taking photos.
Right.
Even just because, you know, what's going on, something different is going on in central London. Mm. You know, I don't think I remember anyone heckling. I don't remember anyone, people are just kind of impressed by the scale of things. I've never felt a negative feeling from it at all.
Great.
And they're very peaceful. You know, there's music, there's chants, there's, you know, it's a really, I can't even describe it. What you felt in that line, times that by a million, and you'll get a sense, I'm so excited for you to be there.
I'm very excited. I'm going to have to come and find you and hold your hand.
Yes.
Maybe meet
we'll
beforehand.
Meet at the beginning. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that would be good.
Vegan brunch.
Yeah. So obviously I've never been to a march before, but I think we all try and do our bit to help. Mm. It's quite hard in this day and age to feel like you're helping, because there's just so much to help with.
Yeah.
But there is also a farm animal sanctuary. They're actually called the Farm Animal Sanctuary. They're based in Evesham, and they have about 500 animals, possibly more now, that they've saved from slaughter, from farms that are closing or being abandoned, or just can't afford to look after the animals properly anymore. So they take them in and give them a home, and these animals then get to live the rest of their lives without being used for meat, for dairy, for clothing, for anything.
Shocked.
And
they get to
just,
live their lives
they
how they were meant to.
Live.
How
exactly.
Dare they?
What?
I know. And
what is this thing?
People just don't even see that as something that should happen, because they're not seen as something that has a life. And that's actually, I don't know the quote for sure, but I know there is another quote in the book where it says something like, animals get to live sort of thing for themselves. Mm. And anything that wants to just live, what's the reason for taking that life away? I don't think there's any reason that's good enough for that, because ultimately anything that's living just wants to live. Doesn't want to die. And what we all do is try to survive. And an animal has exactly the same instincts as us. So the sanctuary, they do so much work that's just great, and there actually isn't a lot of them that work there either, so they're always trying to get volunteers to try and help them. They're always trying to fund money, and they actually have an open day on Sunday the 2nd of September. So Sam and I are thinking of possibly going up there. It'll be my third time that we go up there. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we do have a
How long are you going to go up for?
Just for
a couple of days.
A couple of days. Or maybe stay over. Come with us if you're free.
Maybe I will.
Yeah. I know you'll be in India. But
I'll
poor
be
you.
In India.
I said come back.
Come back just for the sanctuary day.
Yeah. I'll get a charter jet.
Yeah. But like I said, the sanctuary are always putting on days. So even if we can't make this one, we'll go to the next. And we've raised quite a bit of money through different events. I think you both attended them before. Uh-huh. And it won't be the last. I'm also writing a play where I hope to hopefully in the future raise money for them again. But yeah, they do great work. And they're not the only sanctuary. There's so many out there that are doing amazing work. And it's just great to try and support them when you can. So if anybody's free and wants to go away on Sunday the 2nd of September, go to Evesham, go check out the Farm Animal Sanctuary. So yes, I think we'll finish there. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Thank you.
And I'll just leave with one last quote from the book. What we forget about animals, we begin to forget about ourselves.
Lovely.
Sit with that.
We'll see you next time, guys.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye. Meet the muffin now.